Hello and welcome to episode 10, the final episode of series 2 of the Poolside Pass podcast. Over the last 10 weeks, we've brought to you 10 episodes of the podcast, covering a range of things from just coach discussions to slightly more scientific or kind of coaching practice based discussions as well. We hope you've enjoyed those. Today's final episode is with a guest we had on in series one. It's with Coach Tom Rushton from Energy Standard. We're going to be speaking to Tom today about what his life's been like inside the ISL bubble out in Budapest. Just a quick note, this episode was recorded on the 27th of October, so after Energy Standard's first match of ISL 2020, before they'd competed in matches, their second match and their third match, which have now taken place. So you might find references in there to things, predictions Tom's making that may or may not have come into fruition in the second and third matches for Energy Standard. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, make sure you go and share it on social media. Before we get into the interview with Tom, just a quick line from our sponsors, Streamlined.
Become a qualified swimming teacher with Streamlined in as little as 6 days. Learn at your own pace and be guided by our expert tutors. You can do your training face-to-face, online in real-time, or a combination of the two. Assessment can be in your club using videos or attending one of our assessment venues. We offer tailored, high-quality support. Quote the Poolside Pass for an extra 10% discount.
Okay, so I think it's about time we welcome Tom back to the podcast. Tom Rushton, welcome back. How you doing?
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been a while, but very interesting circumstances. Last time I spoke with you, we were kind of joking about who knows what's going to happen with this COVID situation. Now we all know what's going to happen. And yeah,
we last spoke like back in March, I think, for the episode you did for our series one. And I think you were in the process of kind of, well, you and James were closing down your training program, and we still didn't know what was going to happen. And it seems like an absolute lifetime ago that we recorded that episode, but it was still 2020. But a lot has happened since then.
A lot of things have happened, and a lot hasn't happened.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. When we last spoke, I was up in Chamonix, France, in the Alps, and I had been stuck there. I don't remember when I had been stuck there, for how long when we spoke, but yeah. So for me, it was kind of like the beginning of a downhill slide of things going off the rails for coaching. But you know, things are kind of getting back up now. Where now I'm also speaking to you from an alternate location in Budapest, so things are obviously back on track a little bit.
Yeah, so today we're going to speak about kind of go a little bit behind the scenes with you on the ISL 2020, see what your experience has been like. I'm just going to speak a little bit about that. First of all, what's it like being in the ISL bubble right now?
Being in the bubble. In some ways the bubble's, you know, it's really good. They've done a fantastic job, I have to say. They've done a fantastic job of creating an environment which everyone feels safe. Everybody feels that I you know, I'll obviously speak up my own perspective, but I think everyone feels that they can do what they would want to do. Like, you can train, you can compete, and that there's not a lot of concern. Well, I wouldn't say there's not a lot of concern, but there's not a lot of worry, because we know everybody that we interact with here has passed. You know, we have tests a lot of things being shoved up our noses, which isn't great, but it does give you a lot of confidence that you know, everyone is. So yeah, it's really good. There's obviously some restrictions and some compromises that we have had to make. So we're all living in, there's three hotels for the ISL, two that are kind of attached, which are where all of the athletes and the staff for the teams are. And then there's another hotel just across the river, which is where the ISL production staff and home coaches are. But so we can't really leave the hotel area, but it's been really, really good. Really, really good. They've done a fantastic job of creating an environment, like I said, that's just, it's been awesome for everybody.
So following on from that, what's it like now to be kind of back doing what you love and back at a meet where swimmers were racing.
Oh yeah. And just to, yeah, like even everybody obviously had a different experience in 2020, similar but different. And, you know, for me, back in March, I ended up back in Canada, which is where I grew up. And I was there for I think middle of March, sometime around middle of March, up until end of August. Basically, I was back in North America, which is by far the longest I've gone without visiting a pool.
Yeah.
Since, like, I don't even remember. Probably since I was about five, or not even 5 years old. Who knows? And even just getting back on the pool deck and being able to coach was so exciting. And I think sometimes with things that you do day to day, even though you love, you know, you love your job and you love what you do, it gets mundane and you don't appreciate things. And I was just super happy to get back on the pool deck and be able to coach again this season. And now, especially being here, it's excellent. We've only had, it's October 27 when we're recording this.
Yeah.
And so Energy Standard has only had one match, which was the first match. And that was actually quite interesting for a number of reasons. We can go into all of the different intricacies of ISL and whether you like them or they don't or whatever. But one of the things that everybody will have to deal with at some point when you come back to competition is where are you at? Did you do the work that you needed to do during your lockdown? Were you able to? Were you unable to? And how has that, you know, yielded? What results has that yielded for you? And we had a number of surprises in our first match, especially our first day, when we know we were going off of people who hadn't swum a competition since ISL last year. Cool. Some of them were really good surprises, and some of them were surprises that, you know, we're like, okay, we need to get, you know, we need to get some work done in the next bit. But then since that first match, we have an interesting schedule where we have a bye right now. So yeah. We've actually done a 2 week, or we're just about to finish a 2 week training block, which has been fantastic. And there, you know, for me, I've just had about the most fun I can have coaching. I've been working with a middle distance crew, and, you know, we've got this great group of, basically, it's Chad Leclos, Craig Zirk, Victoria Gunez, Susanna Jacobos, Siobhan Hoagie, Emily Seabaum, and Max Litchfield. And just amazing athletes to work with. And, you know, they're super professional, ready to work. And, oh, Mary Sophie Harvey is in there too. Ready to work, excited to be there. They bring out the best in each other. And you know, it's been great also working with their home coaches on how to manage the athletes and learning from what they do at their home programs. It's been just, I've had a blast last couple of weeks. So, yeah.
So if you've got swimmers on your team that don't normally train with like Energy Standards, so for example, I know for certain like Max Litchfield.
Yeah.
Are their home coaches allowed to come out to Budapest and be with you guys?
So there's two different kind of categories of staff or coaches here. Mm-hmm. There's the staff coaches. So like myself, James, we have 8 accreditations for pool deck. There's the two coaches, James and myself. And then there's, I think we have 2 physios, a team manager, general manager. So it's basically, and we have to have one female staff member amongst those. So we have 8 accreditations for the swim meet. And then we have another 10 home coaches that we can have along for the duration or however long they're able to get out for.
Yeah.
So the short answer is yes, they're allowed to be here. But the longer answer is that it is quite a challenge for some of them.
Yeah.
One of the home coaches, one of the British home coaches, Zoe Baker, is here. And, you know, speak of pleasures to work with. Like, she's so great to just having her around. She's really, you know, she's working with Imogen Clark, and she does that daily. But, you know, she's also taken Bria Larson under her wing. And Bria's, you know, she's already an Olympic gold medalist, but they've all learned so much from each other, both, you know, Zoe, Imogen, and Bria. It's fantastic to watch those three just kind of enjoy working with each other and geek out on breaststroke. So, but yeah, so we've got some of the coaches. So the reason I bring up Zoe was because she couldn't get away for the entirety of the camp. 6 weeks away from your program is
it's a long time.
If you're running a club, that's a tough ask. And so Zoe's actually taken her personal holiday time out to be here for, I think, I want to say 2.5 weeks, something like that.
Okay.
And then we have other coaches like Ina, Donis Rapsa's coach, who is here the whole time because, you know, she just works with him, and Andreas Sidlauskas from Lithuania as well. So they're there the whole time and able to do their thing. But basically, short answer is yes, they can come. However, yes, but Max, like Dave Hemmings, he wasn't able to be here. He's actually, I think he was on the book to come with, I think, Team Iron. I could be wrong on that, but, or maybe it's New York Breakers.
I think he's got quite a few racing with New York Breakers as well.
Yeah, I know he has a lot with Breakers. For some reason, I thought it was Iron, but I think it's Breakers. Anyway. I know he was thinking about coming out, but again, it's a tough ask. And not only is it difficult to get out,
it's difficult to get back as well sometimes.
But I know, again, with the UCAM on there, I don't know the exact wording that they use, but there's a list of people who have some kind of funding. I'm blanking on what they call it. But it's basically, if you're not on the Olympic shortlist for staff or whatever, then there was a question mark of whether you would be able to avoid the 2 week quarantine when you get back. And so then obviously your 6 weeks is now 8 weeks away from your program. And yeah, so a bit of a challenge for sure.
So with the being able to have some home coaches come along as well, is that something that's new for 2020 in terms of the solidarity program, or is it something that was possible last season as well?
I think it's different this year, not necessarily because of the solidarity program or anything else, more because of the nature of the camp and what we're doing.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, it's one thing to send your athlete or even to go with your athlete for a weekend, or even when we did the preseason matches last season, where we would, for Energy Standard, we did Indianapolis and then we went straight into Naples with about 5 days of training in between. So that was, say, 10 days away. It's a bit different. So this is, you know, in a very different circumstance. So I think it's more of virtue of that, but and that's why it's a little bit more formalized with those different types of accreditations.
Yeah.
There were definitely opportunities to be around in the previous season, but they were quite a bit different. Like in we didn't bring our strength coach to Indianapolis. We just brought him straight to Naples.
Right,
just because it was just, you know, logistics and flight issues and such. But and then when we had the match in London, obviously some of the home coaches were able to come down and see that and be a little bit more part of the team for that, because it's a bit easier as well. So
cool. So let's talk a bit more kind of about the racing. Obviously there's quite a few rule changes this year in terms of the format of the meet. You know, you've got jackpot times, the way the skins is arranged is slightly different, because the winner of the 4x1 medley gets to pick the strokes. And obviously we spoke about this as well, the return of the 100 medley. You said you didn't understand why that wasn't in last season, but it's in this year. So how have some of these changes to the format impacted your team this year? Have you had to change the way you recruit a little bit more, or?
Well, I don't know if we changed the way that we recruited the team. A lot of the team, I wouldn't say that we have about 60% of our team returning from last year. Okay. We lost people like Diaceto, Kyla Sanchez, Penny Alexiak. We lost those type of people to, mainly because they had, what do they call them? Expansion team in their home country that they were kind of, it was better for the league that they joined those teams, although actually none of them ended up swimming with those teams. But that's, you know, so we lost quite a few of our athletes to that, because we did have a great Canadian group who was training with Ben Titley out in Toronto, Canada, and we weren't able to return them. So we didn't I don't know whether we changed too much about our strategy, because it was basically we had the core of our returning members, and then we'd already recruited a number of athletes anyway before we kind of solidified the rules. So I don't know whether we changed the way that we recruited, but we definitely changed the way that we are creating our lineups, especially after the first match. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we learned a lot. It was difficult to anticipate how everyone was going to swim in that first day of the first match, because you know, like Chad hadn't swum a competition since the ISL final, so you know, we just have no idea. So now I think I and your listeners will have the benefit of knowing how we've done in
the second match.
What will be the second and even the third match. Obviously, you and I don't know how that went because we haven't done it yet. But we hope that we'll probably play around with our lineup in some of these preseason matches before we get to the semifinal and then hopefully the final. Because like I said, we haven't, you know, we want to get some information on who, you know, how people are swimming in different events. But definitely the lineup changes, because now obviously the medley relay is extremely important. And but it's a great example, because we knew that that was an important relay, and we did recruit. Well, we also knew that our medley relay, especially our women's medley relay, was weak last year. So we did make some purposeful recruiting decisions around that. Like we went after some breaststroke swimmers to swim that medley relay for our women's team to bolster it. And you know, one of our, well, we got two new breaststrokers, Bria Larson and Benedetta Pilato from Italy.
Yeah,
and
fast, right?
Yeah, I mean, and everyone knows, like, she was a silver medalist in Guangzhou in the 50 breaststroke. So, like, her speed in the 50 wasn't a surprise, and she swam the 50 on the first day of the first match, and she went 28.97, I think. It's 28.9. Was fantastic, best time. I believe it was a new world junior record. And that wasn't, you know, it was great and it was exciting, but it wasn't necessarily a surprise, because she'd been swimming fast, short course and long course, 50 breaststrokes for a while.
Yeah.
But on paper, when we made the lineup, we're looking at, you know, Bria coming off of swimming 103 in the 100 breaststroke last year at ISL, and Benedetta's best time being 105.9 in the 100. So, you know, we put Bria on the relay. And unfortunately, Bria struggled to get some training time when she was back in Arizona over lockdown. And then the next day, Pilato went 103 in the 100 itself. So, you know, those are the types of things that obviously in hindsight, we're like, okay, now we can make those changes going forward, especially as we get to the match, because they're important. But yeah, we just, you learn, you get some information, and you make some changes and adjustments.
I guess when people haven't raced, like you say, since like some of them 2019, they haven't raced, you know, you need a few matches to kind of get an idea of exactly where they're at competition wise, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's so different than training. Some people may train quite well, but then the racing isn't quite there yet. Or maybe they just need that little sharpening of the skills. Yeah. And also, everybody's rusty and everyone's a little nervous on that first match, you know?
Yeah.
Staff as well, like you know, I wasn't sure where, you know, how do I, you know, do I need my stopwatch to watch these races, how do I do this? Like, takes you, you know, a few heats for sure to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah. How when the jackpot rule came in, were you expecting it to have as big an impact as it's had on the matches? Because it seems to be you know, kind of almost taking over the show, these jackpot swims.
Mm-hmm. Short answer is no. We were a little bit caught off guard by the frequency of the jackpots. But also, if you look at, so now we've had I think the fourth match just ended. Today. Is that right?
Yeah. Let me think. There was the two last weekend. Yeah, so the fourth match is
the done. Fourth match has just ended. And if you look at, now we've got, again, more information. You can see that the Cali Condors are a fantastic team, especially on the women's side. They're very, very strong. And they have a lot of athletes and a lot of events. They're getting a lot of jackpot points. And so we obviously had them in our first match. And we were surprised with how frequent the jackpots were occurring. I think in the second match, it wasn't as prevalent. So that was kind of more where we expected it would have been. But now, and I also think that the jackpots, and this is, you know, me thinking about going forward to the, especially to the final, I think that the jackpots will probably be a little bit less relevant because as you, if you eliminate the weaker teams, then the field will be a bit better. And so the jackpots won't quite make as big of a difference. That being said, you have swimmers like Marco Koch in the 200 breaststroke this past weekend who went 2:08, and that's probably going to jackpot most people. So
yeah, I think as well, what, as you get more towards the semifinal and the final, those swimmers that are racing are going to be a lot more sharper as well because they've had a lot more races under their belt by then.
And the swimmers too. The swimmers didn't. I mean, we obviously knew this was going to be a jackpot rule, but the swimmers, I don't think a lot of them were aware of it. They had no idea. We had a little team meeting and tried to explain it to them. But we also now, we joke about in workouts, you know, if somebody gets beaten, we're like, oh, you don't get a time. Like, in fact, they stole your points too. Like, we kind of, you know, so they, we're hammering it into them that like, you need to get your hand on the wall and
earn your heat. Not only do they steal your team's points, they steal your prize money as well. So
yeah.
There's more incentive there. So the format of the season is very different this year for obvious reasons. Like you say, it being a bit more of a six-week camp. From a coaching perspective, what kind of challenges does that throw up in terms of having to, you know, you might run into a couple of weeks where you've got matches weekend to weekend. How do you kind of plan training around that?
I wish we had matches weekend to weekend. That is not going to be our problem. Our schedule, Energy Standard schedule, and I don't know whether other teams have a similar kind of gap, but our schedule is that we arrived on Sunday. Monday, you're basically quarantined while they get the results of your test that you did in Hungary. So we had 3 days of training and then we were into the first match, which was on the Friday and the Saturday of that week.
Yeah.
So we finished that first match on Saturday night. We had Sunday, we did a loosen off swim. And then we actually have 2 full weeks without a match. So our next match was 2 full weeks after. We have 14 days with no competition. And that's where we are at now. Right now it's the Tuesday today, yeah, Tuesday of that week. So we've been training now for 10 days or so, and so it's been great. There's been no, like I said, I've been loving coaching these athletes. And now we're starting to, and we got some good work in that week, and today and yesterday, and now we're starting to just kind of come down a little bit. But our the challenge for us will be in the next 3 weeks three or 4 weeks. Once we start back, so we start back on Sunday, we've got a match that goes Sunday, Monday, then we have 2 days off, then we have a match that goes Thursday, Friday, then we have 2 days off, then we've got a match that goes Monday, Tuesday, and then 3 days off, and then we're into the semifinals. So,
oh, wow, that's tight.
It's not a match every weekend. It's a match every 2 days. And so that will be, on the one hand, it makes it very simple. All you can do is loosen off, swim, recover, try to rebuild your capacities as much as you can, deal with any injuries or niggles. So it's not, you know, it's not going to be very difficult coaching. But on the other hand, it's going to be full on and intense. And for the group of athletes that I've been working with, I've been really pushing them to make sure that they come into this next match, not tapered, but recovered and not bringing any residual fatigue. Yeah, like getting their sleep, because it's going to be really difficult to start putting those things back in if you come in to this next run low.
So I guess, like, when you're saying you've got those matches every kind of 2 days, is that when you're looking at your kind of season plan for those athletes, you're looking at that period where they're racing every kind of 2 days is a bit of a, almost like a quality focus where the matches themselves are, for all intents and purposes, a bit of a training session in terms of getting some effort swims done?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things, right? That racing is the best form of training. And I think as long as you see it for what it is, then I think you'll be able to manage things okay. And there's not a lot of athletes that have such an overwhelming amount of races that it's going to be much of an issue. You know, I think if you're racing one or two times a day, you know, you'd be okay. There's a couple, obviously, that race a lot. Like in our first match, Sarah raced an ungodly amount, especially on the second day. And that's just a schedule that's not sustainable for that next run of matches, for sure.
So I think we just spoke about it there in terms of being aware of where, like, what Sarah can do in terms of how many swims you can do. How are you measuring? It seems like a silly question as well, because we're talking about a situation where you're literally at, you're racing each other, but how are you measuring success at the moment for the swimmers? Because obviously they've not raced for 8 months. So how are you kind of tracking progress?
Yeah, that's a good question. Some of the athletes, we did have three athletes on our squad that did 100% best times in their first match, which is incredible, especially yeah. Because when you consider the average age of our athletes is 25.
Yeah.
If you go in any swim meet, and no matter how old you are, if you do 100% best times, that's a good meet.
A great meet, right?
yeah, I mean, can't ask for much more. But Benedetta Pilato, who's only 15, but still she's at a high level, so that's, you know, quite impressive. Mm-hmm. Siobhan Hoge, who, you know, her story is quite interesting. She is a University of Michigan graduate student. She swam at Michigan as an undergrad at NCAA. Her coach is, she works with Rick Bishop and Mike Bottom out there. But when, you know, when she is from Hong Kong, she had to go back to Hong Kong. And so Rick has been sending her workouts since March. And I have said many times to both of them, you know, what a fantastic job that they've done to continue to move her forward through that. They have a contact in Hong Kong, David Wong, who runs the sessions and provides a lot of feedback and interfaces. But, you know, that's not an easy position to be in as a coach or an athlete. So for her to go all best times off of what she did last season is just excellent. I'm really super impressed with her. And then also the other one that did the best times was Madeline Bannock from the U.S. She trains out with Matt Credick out in Tennessee. And again, they actually really kind of settled into a good rhythm over the lockdown with her. They were able to get some really good training in, and they working with Jan Albrecht on some ideas and philosophies that he had around what he felt were changes that she needed to make. And obviously they were real successful. She told me one of the days that, I think it was the first day of the meet, I said she'd split 52, I want to say 52-2 on the relay in the 100 freestyle. And I asked her, I said, that's the best time, right? And she said, yeah, I think last year my fastest was 54-4. I'm like, whoa, that's a huge improvement.
Yeah.
2 seconds in 100 freestyle when you're, I think she's 24 years old. It's like, what?
Yeah, that's a big drop.
So I was super impressed with those guys.
That's something there just prompted me with a question. You got those, like, quite a few swimmers in your group that are perhaps used to different ways of working. So you said you got someone who's working with, like, Jan Albrecht, and you got someone that works out of University of Michigan. They're used to kind of slightly different models of training. How are you managing to kind of put that together into the workouts you're writing when they're with you?
I've been loving these last couple of weeks of working with these swimmers and with their coaches. I wanted, for both myself and for the athletes, and I've told the athletes this, is I want them to go back to wherever they're from better for this experience, whether that's faster, hopefully, but also to have learned something and to have gotten a lot out of the training process and the competitions and being part of our team. And I kind of take that for myself as well. I've tried to, for most of the athletes whom I'm working with directly, I've tried to touch base with their home coaches quite a bit.
Yeah.
Whether that's last Sunday, I kind of made a point of trying to phone do a phone call with all of those coaches for a half hour and just talk about the athlete and what they saw as needs of their athlete or whatever, but also just about training philosophy and such. And then also seeing some of the sessions that the athletes are sent, and challenging myself, to try to be a little bit better and integrate some of the stuff I see into that. It's been super positive, I think, for everybody, just, seeing different ideas and such. But the basic answer to your question is we try very hard to make sure that the way that the training situation is that we've got 10 lanes of the pool. We got the whole pool wherever we train. Sometimes it's 25 meters, sometimes it's 50, but we always have 10 lanes. But we have 32 athletes, and they don't all, not every athlete is going to every single session. We have, in the 2 weeks where we just have training, we have 14 sessions. We have a morning and an afternoon available every day. Yeah. But we try to kind of fit as much as we can, fit the swimmers that train similarly, trying to kind of make their template for the week similar so that we can integrate as many as we can into the same workouts.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'll send the template that we have for our resident guys out to the other coaches and interface with them and discuss about what makes sense and what doesn't, because obviously when you're making your plan, there's the reality versus what works on paper and then there's what works in actuality. Yeah. So they're just trying to talk with the coaches and also some of the sessions that they send are fantastic. This morning we had on our mid distance group, we had 9 athletes and I think 4 of them I ran in the session that Rick Bishop had sent for Siobhan. And then the other 5 did a session that I wrote that was just a very basic, low level aerobic session. Again, the athletes are learning a lot from doing different programs. And I try to make sure that they're not just learning how to swim my program, because that's not what I want to get out of it. I want everybody to benefit from the opportunities that we have here. So,
Yeah, that sounds like a kind of ideal setup, because, you're communicating with those kind of home coaches as well, and they're sending stuff through to their athletes. It's helping you as a coach to kind of get new ideas, but also you're able to then use their expertise for the better of the team as well. So they might send a session through, like you say, for Siobhan, and you might think, oh, that looks perfect for someone else. So you're able to draw on that expertise as well to help strengthen your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I do think it is. Obviously, I think it's an ideal circumstance. We have a great team of both staff and swimmers, and I think we have the most international team. We have 20 different countries on our squad this year, which I think is the most out of anyone. And one of the things that we push quite a lot with everybody is respecting differences and different cultures and different ways of doing things. And we strongly believe that is why one of the reasons that we were successful last season was because we don't, push anyone to do something one specific way. All of our staff and all of our athletes do things the way that has made them successful. And that's actually something that we do have to work a little bit with the athletes on is if this session looks like it's good for you, do it, but don't do it because it's interesting and different, because you're already a good athlete and keep doing what you've been doing that's made you successful. Don't change things at this point. It's not the time to do that, unfortunately, because we do have to swim fast.
Yeah, you have got to win some matches.
Yeah, Yeah, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
But so, actually, that comes back before we go on, because we didn't really answer the question where you asked me how we're measuring the success. I kind of mentioned our best time swimmers. But we do want to win the matches, and we do want to see the athletes score those points. One of the things that I've tried to push, especially with the athletes that I coach more full-time, is to improve from match to match to match. And we're lucky this season. So we've got Benedetta Pilato with us, who's Italian, and we brought to help her a little bit, but also because we work with him a lot. We brought Stefano Nura, who works with his company is Swim Lab, and he does a lot of video analysis work. And so through all these connections, we actually have him here now with us to be able to video the races. Obviously, all the races are on TV, but it's very difficult to actually analyze an event based on the TV coverage, especially if your swimmer is not first. So having him here, because last year we really felt that one of the areas that we were weak was being able to give feedback to the athletes. Mm-hmm. The pace of the competition is so fast that as a coach, you just aren't able to really feed back to the athletes during it at all.
Yeah.
So now we've got the video and we've got Stefano, his patience on that is just amazing. He will sit for hours with the athletes in between matches and go over videos, not just the ones that they did, but you know, some other ones for examples. He's fantastic at that. So we really want to measure our success with the athletes as progression from match to match, and using Stefano to try to help them learn from their mistakes and their successes in the matches as we go forward.
Awesome. Just kind of looking back now on that first match that has already happened. We can't look back on matches 2 and 3 for Energy Standard because at time of recording, they've not taken place yet. What has been your swim of ISL 2020 so far in terms of the race you've probably been most impressed by?
For Energy Standard?
We'll go one with Energy Standard and then one when you look across the whole league.
The first match, we had a number of, like I said, we had three swimmers that did all best times, and we had a number of records set. It's hard not to say that Benedetta's world junior record was not kind of our standout swim. Yeah. But also, we also had Siobhan's 100 and 200 freestyle were Asian records. And her 100, she already had a 200 freestyle Asian record, which isn't to say it's not a fantastic swim, but her 100 free, she broke Rikako Iki's Asian record, which is, you know, Rikako is obviously a great athlete, so it's really great for her to get that. And then we also had a European record, maybe it was just a Belarusian record from Ilya Shumanovich, and another Belarusian record from Anastasia Skurdai. So in terms of standout performances from our athletes, I'd have to say those were quite impressive. Although on the subjective side, Sarah on the second day swam, I don't remember the exact order, but she swam the 100 freestyle. She swam the 200 freestyle. Is that right?
Second day.
She swam the relay. Yeah, she swam the 100 IM. She swam the 50 butterfly. And she's on mixed relay. And in the mixed relay, she anchored in, I want to say 51.1. No, 50.4. She anchored in 50.4 and didn't breathe at all in the last 25 after swimming, I think, four other events before that within about 45 minutes. And so I think that was probably the most impressive swim.
It's a professional swim right there.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. In terms of the whole mat or the whole league, I think the two actually in the I think the yeah both in the most recent match, which was match number 4 between Cali New York Iron and DC Trident, both the breaststroker men, Emre Saki from Turkey in his 50 breaststroke 25.5, and his skins performance finishing the third round of skins in 25.7. You know, 25.5 is as close to the world record, but also so is Marco's 200 breaststroke that we already mentioned, 2 minutes 0.8.
Yeah.
And one of the things that impresses me about Marco, it's great working, living and working in the bubble, because you really get to see and all of the athletes and staff and how they live their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how I live my life is I run a lot, and I'm running around the island because that's the only place we're allowed to go. So I run the 5K loop around the island every day. And many, many days that I'm doing that, I see Marco walking back from the pool with his kit bag and his backpack, and he's taking the long way. He must be going the whole loop around every time he walks back. And to do that and still go 2 minutes is really impressive. You don't have to walk back from the pool. There are buses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, so I'm pretty impressed with him. Like I said, for not only the swim, but also because I know, personally, I've seen him do that multiple times. So good for him.
Yeah. So just to finish up then, what would be your kind of top 3 points for coaches who are going for a return to training or a return to racing over the next few weeks and months?
For the return to training, it depends, I think, on very much on what the situation has been with the athletes. Like, obviously, there's basics. You want to build your capacities, go gradually, and try not to rush things. Try to take a bigger picture view. And then returning to competition, again, you don't know what you're going to get. So definitely set, I wouldn't say low expectations, but don't set expectations as much based on performance, but more based on the process, which yeah. obviously is good advice at any point, but especially so now. And I think, to be honest, that, you know, if there's one thing that this particular season has taught us, is all of those, the basics, you come back to all those basics because they work, you know. And I think that stripping away all of the superfluous things, when you don't have excess pool time, when you don't have access to facilities, when you don't have more competitions, you know, and actually asking what's really important and making sure you get those things in, has been the situation for everybody this year. And when you ask yourself those questions and you figure out the answer, it's always a good thing. So,
yeah. Cool. Tom, thank you very much for your time. I know it's later on in the evening for you out in Budapest right now. So thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Always a pleasure.
And obviously wishing Energy Standard all the best for the rest of the ISL season. Hopefully matches 2 and 3 go your way, and by the time listeners are listening to this episode, Energy Standard are looking strong in the league.
Yeah, we're looking forward to I think we're gonna, we might try to do some, make some different choices around the lineup as we go in the next couple of matches, because we do have, I think mathematically it would be very difficult for us to not make the semifinal. So I think we have a little bit of leeway there. And so I would like to see us try some things with lineups that maybe we are not 100% sure of. And I'm sure that people will be questioning why we made some decisions, and you can probably read between the lines, and that's why. You know, I'm sure they won't all go well. Maybe some of them will. But yeah, we're looking forward to it, and, you know, hope we have another successful season, obviously.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And, listeners, thank you for tuning in again. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I did. And if you've not managed to catch any of the ISL, make sure you do. It's available in, I don't know, like 150 kind of countries online. So wherever you're living, chances are it's on a network near you. I haven't got time to go through the whole list right now, but
but also you can go on the, they have the over, what's it called, over the top. Is what it's called? I don't know. You can go on the ISL website, and I think you can stream it from the website, as I understand.
Oh, wow.
And there's definitely, they're working a lot on getting a lot of more internet streaming going on with that. They're really trying to push that objective as well.
Sounds good. So yeah, on the ISL website, you can definitely find out more about ISL 2020. If you like this podcast, if you like what we've been doing in this series, make sure you share it with other coaches. We'll be back in the new year with series 3. Make sure you follow us on social media. We're at the Poolside Pass on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And check out our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. Until next time, take care.